Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studio. Welcome to the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson. It's a beautiful Thursday out there on this October 24th, 2019. Oh, it's going to be a good day, and we got a good show planned for you. We're going to talk about World Series Game 2, also talk about some of the managerial hires that have been announced over the last couple days. We'll take a look at the Champions League Match Day 3 and some big teams finally getting going there and take a look at the standings. We'll also preview Thursday Night Football going down tonight between Washington and Miami. And then I'll give you my two cents worth on why I think the MLS did a great job changing their playoff structure and why other soccer leagues around the world should look to ditch the two-leg playoff system or two-leg knockout system. That's all coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show today, but let's start by talking about Game 2 of the World Series last night. Wow. Just wow. I mean, it started off a little bit surprising with both starters struggling in the first inning. Obviously, with Rendon getting the triple, the double to left off of Verlander, which allowed Eaton and Turner to come in and score. Then bottom of the first, Bregman stepped up with Brantley on, hit a home run to left to tie it up at two. And then from that point out, I think it was the game that we kind of expected and, again, kind of took the same route as Game 1. Both starters a little shaky at the beginning of the game, but then kind of settled in for the next few innings. And from the second to the sixth, it was a pitcher's duel. It was, I mean, some tight situations here and there, but for the most part, pretty uneventful. And each pitcher just kind of making their pitches, getting through the inning, and holding it to a 2-2 lead. And it looked like as though it was going to be that way with Verlander and Strasburg really settling in. It felt like they could go 7-8 innings each and really take this thing out to the last inning. And then it all just fell apart in the seventh for Houston. It was unbelievable to watch the top of the seventh unfold. Because, again, after that sixth inning, it felt truly like an all-star pitcher duel. It felt like both teams had gotten the chance to strike early, and they took advantage of that. And then they just couldn't touch any of these pitchers. And then Suzuki steps up, hits a home run to left, and it all just falls apart from there. I mean, it's 3-2. If you think about just that, Suzuki steps up and, you know, is able to hit one off Verlander and kind of gives Washington this spark again, up 3-2, but it's only 3-2. But then it just all goes awry with a walk and an intentional walk. All of a sudden, the bases are loaded. Kendrick, after, you know, the guy that hit the grand slam against the Dodgers, hits this kind of, you know, not a weak infield single, but it's not a hard hit ball, not an overly hard hit ball. And, you know, Houston couldn't field it, couldn't get it done. Robles scored, and it was 4-2. And that's when you kind of started to feel it slipping away from Houston. When you got this ground ball that you could have maybe not ended the inning on, but at least gotten an out and gave up a run for an out, you couldn't handle the ball. And it started to seem like the cracks started to form in Houston at that point. And then Cabrera steps up and hits a single to shallow center. That allowed Soto and Turner to come in and score. Now all of a sudden it's 6-2 Washington. And even at that point, I wouldn't necessarily say it felt like Houston was out of it. Because again, that's only a slant. It's a 4-run lead. But we've seen grand slams in this playoff before. Not to say that Houston couldn't get themselves in that position. They got bats to hit a grand slam and possibly tie this up. But 6-2, not looking good. And then it just got even worse with Zimmerman, again, infield single. The throwing error by Bregman at third. That allowed Kendrick to come in and score. Cabrera came in and scored. Now all of a sudden it's 8-2. And it's 8-2 because two bad infield errors. And that, again, we talked about it a little bit during the Nevada football broadcast, also last night on the coach's show with Coach Norvell. You can't shoot yourself in the foot. You can't do these self-inflicted errors or penalties when you are trying to come back from a deficit. And so for Houston to, again, kind of show those cracks under pressure in that game against Washington at home, you start to feel like Houston isn't as untouchable as they looked maybe coming into this series. Granted, the Yankees beat them twice, including Game 1 at home in Houston, the ALCS. But the way Houston bounced back in Game 2 of that series, it did not look like the same team trying to bounce back in this Game 2 against Washington. and then just nothing happening in the bottom of the seventh inning for Houston. The Astros looked like a team shell-shocked, looked like a team that didn't know how to really go about themselves on the field or in the batter's box after that. And then 8-2 after 7, nothing in the bottom of the 7th. Step back up in the top of the 8th. And the one thing Houston needed was a 3-up, 3-down, quick top of the 8th to halt the momentum from Washington and try to get something going for themselves. And they just couldn't when Eaton then stepped up, homered to right. Robles was on base. It's now 10-2 Washington. Cabrera singles to center, which brings home Soto a little bit later on in the inning. Now it's 11-2 Washington. And, I mean, at this point, it is over. I mean, the Houston Astros are a great team. They're the American League champions. They were the best team in baseball, but ain't nobody coming back from down 11-2 in the eighth inning. You just don't. It just doesn't happen. The way Washington was playing, the way their bullpen, you know, they gave up some runs later on in the inning or later on in the game, those eighth and ninth inning, or really just the ninth inning. But their bullpen came in, was able to do their job, keep the lead, keep Houston off bases, keep them, again, kind of frustrated in the batter's box. And then coming up in the ninth, Taylor, another home run, 12-2 now Washington. And at that point, I mean, the crowd had pretty much left the ballpark, and you could just hear that little patch of Washington Nationals fans going absolutely crazy as their team is up 12-2 on the road. And Maldonado was able to get kind of a feel-good homer on the bottom of the ninth to make it 12-3. But that was it. That was game two. Nationals, after a first six-inning real pitcher duel, just took over in the last three innings. I mean, they put up 10 runs in the last three innings. That right there is, I mean, essentially how you close out a game offensively. If you're Washington on the road, that's how you send a message. And I picked Houston in six, but now with Washington winning both games in Houston, I mean, I just don't see any way the Astros can come back from this. It's one thing to lose game one 5-4 and then coming back to win game two, but to lose game one 5-4, then come back to your home field the next night and just get smacked around and lose by 9 runs. Not only that, but you lost the first two games behind your two best pitchers. I mean, the two guys that are leading the American League Cy Young Awards, and honestly, you could make an argument that either one of those guys could fight for either one of the Cy Young Awards, but the fact that Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander stepped on the mound for the first two games and couldn't pitch their teams to victory, that says something about Washington. And Gerrit Cole, I think, had a better outing than Justin Verlander did in terms of quality, but for Washington to have worked around these two pitchers on the road to start this series coming off an extended layoff after sweeping the St. Louis Cardinals, this is a team that is in such a championship state of mind. When they go home, it is going to be incredibly tough for Houston to stay mentally stable and emotionally stable when you are down 2-0, losing the first two games at home, and now trying to fight off a ravenous crowd in our nation's capital. They're going to be so pumped for this team to return home and put on a show like they have all postseason long for them. It's going to be ridiculous. And if you're Washington, if someone were to tell you, hey, all you got to do is win two out of your next three home games, and you'll be World Series champions, and you get to celebrate in front of your home crowd, you don't think they're salivating at the mouth just that little bit more because of that? And now, Zach Greinke is going to be on the mound for Game 3. At least that's the scheduled starter for Game 3 for Houston. And out of the big three for the Astros, Cole, Verlander, and Greinke, Greinke coming into this series had been kind of the shaky one. Cole was just dominant through that 25-start stretch where he didn't lose. Verlander, the Hall of Famer that he is, although he has some World Series struggles, has put together a fantastic season again and put together a decent LDS and LCS. But now Greinke, who's been kind of the unstable star of those three, now is tasked with going out there on the road and trying to get this team back in it from down 2-0. And honestly, I just don't think it's going to happen. Even if Houston wins Game 3, I don't really see the Astros coming back and winning this series. Even if it goes back to Houston, I feel like it's Washington's time now, the way they've played this series. And A.J. Hinch, manager of the Astros, said they just have flat-out outplayed us. on these first two games, and he's absolutely right, and I don't think anything is going to change as they go back home now. That's the biggest challenge for any road team at the start of the series, trying to steal one, if not two games on the road. Washington did that. And so now the Nationals, there's nothing stopping them from just going ballistic at home, just like they did in game two. I mean, you want to talk about a ballpark? I mean, you build your team for your ballpark. So the Nationals coming back now to their home ballpark, the confidence there, they're built for it. I mean, that's a recipe for a championship. And it's amazing how through baseball and through this kind of a long season, you look at a team like Houston who can win 107 games and only lose 55 and then struggle like this when it matters most. But then again, that's baseball in the playoffs. Who gets the hottest at the right time and who can keep it going? And Washington has been hot since really a couple games before the wild card, the wild card matchup against Milwaukee, but especially since then. I mean, from the first pitch of the wild card game to now, they've been the hottest team in baseball, and that's why they are on the verge of winning their first championship in franchise history. But they have an off day today. They'll travel to our nation's capital. Game three will be tomorrow. So we'll talk more about game three on tomorrow's show when we do have Mr. Sean Cloud back in studio. But we'll talk about game three a little more tomorrow. I did want to get to a couple managerial hires that have been announced. First off, pretty cool one to see David Ross returning to the Chicago Cubs dugout. Be there now as the new manager. He signed a three-year deal for the Cubs. Of course, he was on that 2016 curse-breaking World Series championship team, so it'll be interesting to see how he now has to manage a lot of the guys that he played with on that team. So it'll be cool to see the dynamic there and how he adjusts himself to that role, but I think he's going to really enjoy it. I think he's going to have a lot of fun. I think he's going to help those players have a lot of fun. And, I mean, you want to talk about franchises to be a part of in baseball, what better franchise than the Chicago Cubs? And then the San Diego Padres have hired Jace Tingler of the Texas Rangers, who was the Major League Player Development Field Coordinator for Texas this past season. 38 years old, he'll take over the job in San Diego. It's a team that finished last in the NL West at 70-92, but Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Chris Paddock, it's a team that does have some young talent. So if this guy, Jace Tingler, that does have some talent or some experience with young talent and developing that, might be a good fit for him to come in and really just kind of shake things up. If he gets a couple years to really work with these young guys, who knows, the Padres could be the next team to make a couple runs at the NL West in that division and make some playoff appearances. And then finally, the Philadelphia Phillies have their man. It is the former New York Yankee manager, Joe Girardi. And I think it's a smart hire for Philadelphia in that you're a sports city, a big sports city. You have a guy coming in that has a decade of experience handling one of the most popular, if not the most popular, Major League Baseball franchise in the New York Yankees in New York market. He knows how to take a team to a championship, doing so as a player and a manager. So I think it's a smart hire for the Phillies. He's got talent on that team, especially obviously leading the way with Bryce Harper. I think it's a smart call. It's a good call. And good luck to all the new managers as we approach next season. We still have to finish this season, but it's going to be fun to see how these new guys get going when the season rolls around next season. But still a couple spots to be filled, so we'll keep our eyes and ears out for that and see where everybody falls at the end of it. But coming up after the break, the UEFA Champions League match day 3 is in the books, and finally some big teams are rolling as we thought they would be. So we'll take a look at the standings after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, the UEFA Champions League is through 3 games of their group stage. They are halfway home to the round of 16 knockout stage. And we saw some big-name teams really struggling to get going, really struggling to get off the ground in this competition. We finally started to see a little more of that, a little more competitiveness from those big-name teams in this third match day for the Champions League. So now that we are halfway through, let's see where everybody is, kind of where everybody is standing right now. Start off, obviously, with Group A. Paris Saint-Germain in first, 3 games, 3 wins. They have 9 points. After opening up with a big win against Real Madrid, 3-0, they followed it up with a 1-0 win over Galatasaray on the road, and then just walloped Club Brugge on the road, 5-0. So they're sitting atop Group A. They are assured no worse than a third-place finish in the group, which is the transfer spot to the Europa League, which is essentially Tier 2 of the Champions League kind of system. And then Real Madrid sitting in second with a win, a draw, and a loss. They finally got going, as I mentioned, after that shock loss to PSG 3-0. And not so much a shock that Real Madrid lost, just a shock they lost 3-0. Even though they were on the road, but they recovered from that. They were able to draw even with Club Brugge at home 2-2. But even then, I mean, Club Brugge was up 2-0 at the half, which forced Real Madrid to really kind of fight back and have to look for certain opportunities, take some risks. They finally got a goal in the 55th minute, but then again, even in deep into the second half with about 5 minutes and change left, they finally got the tying goal. Did Real Madrid to tie it up at 2-2 and escape their home turf with a point from Club Brugge and then beating Galatasaray 1-0. They finally got their first win. So they're sitting in second, which is also a round of 16 spot. And then Club Brugge currently sitting in third, which is that transfer spot to the Europa League with 2 points. And then Galatasaray of Turkey in last place with 1 point, set to be eliminated from Group A should they stay in that position. But then we move on to Group B. Bayern Munich of Germany now comfortably in first. 3 games, 3 wins, 9 points, just like PSG. They got to a great start beating Red Stars 3-0. Then a 7-2 beating of Tottenham on the road in London by Bayern. And then a 3-2 battle against Olympiakos in Greece, where again Bayern Munich kept fighting, getting tested from a smaller team from Greece. So Bayern Munich kind of showing their muscle now with 9 points plus 9 goal differential. They also are assured no worse than a third place finish, so they will not be eliminated from European competition this year. They will get a chance to continue to play on. Tottenham finally up into second, also with a win, a draw, and a loss. They got their tournament started with a 2-2 draw against Olympiakos on the road and that 7-2 loss at home. And then a couple days ago, also at home hosting the Red Stars, they finally got a win 5-0, so put some emphasis on it and from their end. But Tottenham, again, one of those big teams, finally getting going in this competition with 4 points. The Red Stars in third with 3 points. They're in that transfer spot to the Europa League. And Olympiakos in the elimination spot in Group B, also with 1 point. Then we move on to Group C, Manchester City. Also 3 games, 3 wins, 9 points. Also put on a show. They started off beating Shakhtar Donetsk 3-0. Then beat Dynamo Zagreb 2-0, followed by a 5-1 victory over Atalanta. So Manchester City, although they're second in the Premier League right now in England, really flexing their muscle here in the Champions League. And then Dynamo Zagreb in second with 4 points and a plus 2 goal differential. That's why they are in second with Shakhtar Donetsk, with also with 4 points but a minus 2 goal differential. That's why they sit in that third place spot for trying to transfer to the Europa League. And then Atalanta, it's been a tough stretch. 3 games, 3 losses, 0 points. 4-0 loss to Dynamo Zagreb. 2-1 loss to Shakhtar Donetsk, and the 5-1 loss to Manchester City. There's always one team that just kind of gets beaten up more than the others in these groups. Unfortunately for Atalanta, it is them this year in Group C. But from some of the research, from some of the articles I've read, this is a team that has never really had an overly amount of success in Italy. So to see them get this opportunity after the season they had last year, they're enjoying being there. They're working hard, too. They're playing hard in these first 3 games. So hopefully they can get rewarded with maybe at least a draw in the last 3 games of this group stage. Then we move on to Group D, where nobody is safe. No one is guaranteed of any worse finish than third or anything like that. It is still all up for grabs in Group D with Juventus and Atletico Madrid, both with 7 points. But Juventus, a +4 goal differential to Atletico Madrid's +3. Both drawing 2-2 in their first games against each other, and then just really going on a rampage. Since then, Juventus with a 3-0 win over Bayer Leverkusen, then a 2-1 win over Lokomotiv Moscow, and Atletico Madrid had a 2-0 win over Lokomotiv Moscow in their second game, and then a 1-0 win over Bayer Leverkusen in their game two a couple days ago. So this has been the two teams that we thought would take control of Group D. Juventus and Atletico Madrid have done that. They show that it's probably going to come down to the two of them with their 2-2 draw to open up the group play. And what's so great about that is that they will play in their second to last game of this group stage, the 26th of November, which is match day 5 out of 6. Juventus will host Atletico Madrid. They'll have their second game. So then heading into that final match day for the Champions League group stage on December 11th, at least for Group D, it'll be December 11th. We'll see how they match up and where they are. But these are the two teams that were expected to take control of Group D. They are doing so now. Lokomotiv Moscow sits in third with 3 points in that transfer spot. Then Bayer Leverkusen sitting with 0 points in the elimination spot in Group D. In Group E, same thing. Everybody still alive. Napoli in first with 7 points, with 2 wins and a draw in their 3 contests. Liverpool with 6 points in second place. This is the only competition between the Champions League and the Premier League. This is the only place Liverpool has lost so far this year. With their 8-win-1-draw record in the Premier League, they have 2 wins and 1 losses now in the Champions League. And then you have Red Bull Salzburg in third in that transfer spot with 3 points, and then Genk in the final elimination spot with just 1 point. The big win came from Red Bull Salzburg beating Genk 6-2 in their first meeting. Napoli got the better of Liverpool 2-0, and then Genk, even though they're in last place, they put up some good fights. They fought Napoli to a scoreless draw when Liverpool beat Red Bull Salzburg 4-3. And Genk had their first kind of bad loss, losing 4-1 to Liverpool. And then Napoli toppling Red Bull Salzburg 3-2 yesterday in their third matchups of the group stage. Then looking at Group F, Barcelona, 7 points atop Group F with 3 games, 2 wins, 1 draw. They opened up with their draw on the road against Borussia Dortmund, 0-0. And they beat Inter Milan at home 2-1. Then Slavia Prague yesterday on the road 2-1 to put them atop Group F. Inter Milan in second with 4 points and a +1 goal differential with a win, a draw, and a loss. They drew with Slavia Prague to open up their tournament 1-1. And then they lost to Barcelona 2-1 before beating Borussia Dortmund yesterday 2-0 at home. Dortmund sitting in third in that transfer spot with 4 points and an even goal differential, also with a win, a draw, and a loss. And then Slavia Prague with just 1 point from their 1 draw against Inter Milan 1-1 when they opened up their tournament is keeping them in the elimination position. Then we get to Group G that has Red Bull Leipzig leading the way with 6 points after 3 games, 2 wins, and 1 loss. Then Zenit St. Petersburg of Russia in second with 4 points and a +1 goal differential. They do have a head-to-head away goals lead on Lyon with 1 goal to Lyon's 0, which is why Lyon is in third with 4 points, also with a +1, but again missing out on that head-to-head away goals differential between them and Zenit St. Petersburg. Then Benfica in fourth from Portugal with 3 points with a win and 2 losses. So really just 3 points separating this whole group. No one really standing out yet. They've all been relatively close games. 1-1, 2-1, 3-1, 2-0, 2-1, 2-1. So they've all been 1 or 2 goal games, if not tied. So no one really able to break away in Group G. And that's really what's made this group so much fun to watch. Plus, no one essentially was expected to stand out. So to see these teams so competitive and so close, it's been a very entertaining group to watch. And then finally, last but not least, Group H, which has Chelsea sitting atop of it with 6 points. Even though they don't have a better goal differential than Ajax, Chelsea beat Ajax head-to-head. That's why they are in first with 6 points and a plus one. And Ajax in second with 6 points and a plus five goal differential. Both of those teams set to advance the round of 16. Valencia sitting in that transfer spot with 4 points. And Lille in the elimination spot with 1 point. So finally starting to see these big teams get rolling like Chelsea and Tottenham and Real Madrid, seeing some of these teams finally putting it together. I mean, with this and with league play, I mean, there's always so many competitions going on during a soccer season. Just look at, if you look at the U.S. soccer teams, they have their league play. They have the U.S. Open Cup, depending on where you finish in Major League Soccer. I mean, if you win the U.S. Open Cup, you get to go to the CONCACAF Champions League. Not that a lot. I mean, that's like pretty much the only chance a team outside Major League Soccer has a chance to get into the U.S. Or into the CONCACAF Champions League. But even in the U.S., you have a couple tournaments going on throughout your season. It's almost double that over in Europe. They always have their domestic cup, they have their domestic league, they have the Champions League if they're in it, the Europa League if they're in it. They have a couple different domestic cups. So the way these guys continue to play, continue to rebound, it's always amazing to watch these guys just get back out there and keep playing. And it's fun to see when you have the best teams in Europe like this going at it. It always provides some fireworks. I can't wait to see match day 4 here in a couple weeks. And we'll see how it all starts to pan out. But I think it's going to be pretty exciting. And speaking of how things pan out, is Tom Brady really going to leave New England for a different team? We're going to talk about that as well as preview Thursday Night Football tonight coming up after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more. Welcome back to the show. Thursday Night Football is tonight. We get set for week 8 of the NFL season, and we start with the Washington Redskins going on the road to the Minnesota Vikings. And this is it's an interesting one because it's essentially the two teams that swapped quarterbacks, even though Case Keenum went from Minnesota to Denver before he went from Denver to Washington. Keenum was in Minnesota when Cousins was in Washington. Now they've swapped teams. They're playing each other. And Minnesota, I would think, is a lot happier to have Cousins right now than Washington is to have Keenum because he's struggled. Case Keenum, since that Minnesota miracle, right, that game against New Orleans, end of the game, throws it up to Diggs, he catches it. Defender goes flying underneath him. He runs it in for the game-winning touchdown. Since that game in 2017, the divisional round of 2017, Case Keenum has gone 7-16 as a quarterback. That's pretty much the magic wearing off. And I saw some questions this week, earlier today, about it. Should Washington switch to Dwayne Haskins? I've been saying this probably since week 2 or week 3 of the NFL season. Yes, you should absolutely switch to Dwayne Haskins. Not sure what Case Keenum can give you anymore. He hasn't really shown that he is a winning quarterback. You're 1-6 right now on the season, so it's not like he is losing tight games. And you're 3-3 or 3-4, and you're just trying to get things right. You're 1-6 and constantly struggling. So, yes, I think it's time for a change at quarterback. I think Dwayne Haskins can come in. And I'm going to tell you, Washington, what I've been telling Miami the last couple of weeks. Put your young guy in there, the young guy you drafted to essentially be the future of your franchise, and let him get as much experience as he can since you're in a season that isn't going anywhere. Why Miami still has Fitzpatrick out there, I don't know. But Washington, you can make a choice today and tonight that could at least turn your season around and get something out of it down the road. Because Case Keenum, what he can give you isn't what Dwayne Haskins can give you if you teach him and give him experience. I'm all for giving guys chances. I think Case Keenum, Had a fun year in Minnesota. He couldn't really give Denver what they were looking for, hence the change to Joe Flacco. And he just hasn't had a great start to his career in Washington. And I can understand some people might say, hey, give the guy, you know, a season or so to really show if maybe he can settle in a little bit more down the road. But I think for the way your season's going right now, if you're Washington, nothing to lose putting Dwayne Haskins out there and letting him get some more time in as your starting quarterback. Because Minnesota, with Kirk Cousins, is rolling. The last three games, Kirk Cousins has 325.3 passing yards per game, 10 touchdowns, 1 interception, and 142.6 passer rating. He is playing out of his mind these last couple games. And even though Adam Thielen is listed as out, he still has Stephon Diggs there. Obviously, with the run game, they have Dalvin Cook, who's done a fantastic job. He just keeps adding yards to his total over the season, his NFL league-leading total for the season. And, I mean, I think this is going to be – I don't know how Minnesota doesn't win this game. At home, against a struggling Washington team, Minnesota, I think, is a favorite by 16 or 16.5 points. I can see it being that, if not more. I mean, Washington, the only reason they were able to hold San Francisco to 9 points last week was because it was atrocious weather and the field was all sorts of just slippery. It was a swamp, essentially, on the field with how wet it was. And even with that, Washington can barely slow down the San Francisco offense. Because of the weather, both teams chose not to pass the ball too much. So they just stuck to running the ball. But Washington couldn't stop San Francisco's run game enough. And they were able to get three field goals out of it, win the game 9-0. So I think now that you're in a dome, there's no threat of inclement weather. Dalvin Cook is going to have a offensive line just making holes for him all over the place. You're going to have Kirk Cousins. I don't see Washington getting any pressure on Kirk Cousins in this game. I think it's going to be a relatively simple game for their offense in just terms of being able to do what they want to do, how they want to do it. And I think, again, if Washington decides to go with Case Keenum this whole game, it's going to be frustrating. It's going to be pointless. They're going to leave 1-7. If you put Dwayne Haskins in, yeah, you could still lose big, but I think you're making progress towards the future with him in it than just leaving Case Keenum out there to do whatever it is he's going to do. Now, there is one little silver lining for Washington, and that is that Adrian Peterson has said he will play tonight. Whether the coaching staff lets him or not, and that's official, I don't know. He is listed as questionable as of right now. But he has said that he's going to play tonight, so if he is out there, that'll give him a little bit of a boost. But even Adrian Peterson can't save this Washington team. I mean, he had a fumble last game when they looked like they had at least something going on offense. He coughed the ball up. So if you're Washington, switch to Dwayne Haskins. Let the guy come in here. Let him get all, just if he's going to make mistakes, let him do that. This is a game where, again, you're not expected to win. You're 16-point underdogs. So what is Case Keenum? What can he give you tonight and for the future that Dwayne Haskins might not be able to? I mean, let him go out there, run the offense, see what he can do. Let him get comfortable. Don't just put him out there for the second half. I think if you're going to play Dwayne Haskins tonight, it's got to be from the get-go. Let him understand what a full game feels like. I don't know what kind of preparation he's had coming into this game in terms of being a starting quarterback for it, but it seems pointless to me to keep Case Keenum out there when through the first seven games, he's shown you there really isn't anything there. Let Dwayne Haskins get a shot. Let him go out there and see what he can do against this Minnesota Vikings team. Their defense has been playing well, so even if he makes mistakes, I don't think, again, Case Keenum can give you anything any better. I think it's time for Washington, just like it's time for Miami, to commit to the younger guy on your team and really start to build your quarterback for the future and see where it goes. Because, again, nothing that could happen tonight to Case Keenum would be better for this team than Dwayne Haskins going out there and making the same mistakes. At least he would learn and get experience for the future moving forward. But I see Minnesota winning this game at home, at least 16 points, maybe not even a little bit more. But I think Minnesota is gonna have a pretty confident building game tonight at home against Washington. And remember, come on out to Sully's inside Tamarack Junction off of South Virginia Street tonight for the Thursday night football game. Myself and Tony, we will be down there hanging out till the end of the third quarter. I'll be doing a raffle. We'll be giving stuff away anytime somebody scores. We have a cool halftime prize as well. So come on down there, hang out for the Thursday night football game. It's always a lot of fun down there inside Sully's. And now let's talk about a topic I saw earlier today and yesterday, talked a little bit about on ESPN, which was Tom Brady's future. Talk of whether or not he'll retire or he'll stay in New England for a few more seasons or if he'll possibly go somewhere else to play in the NFL. And listening to the guys talk about that on the Get Up show this morning or yesterday morning, interesting to hear a lot of them just say that they see him staying there in New England or retiring. Like, right, why go anywhere else? And I agree with that, because what more can you really do besides just beat the Patriots? We've seen you beat everybody else. We know what you can do there. So unless you're going to go somewhere into the NFC to try and meet the Patriots in the Super Bowl and beat the one team you can't beat because you've played for them your whole career, otherwise, I don't get it. Because even if you go somewhere else and win a championship, yeah, that's impressive, but it's not like you won one or two with New England and were trying to get back to the top and struggled, so you went somewhere else and then managed to pull out another championship. You've won six already. So unless you're going to try and do this crazy thing, like if you were to go to like a Cincinnati or a Miami or a Washington maybe, like a bottom-of-the-barrel team this year and try to miraculously lead them to a championship, otherwise there's no point. Just enjoy the kind of the career you're having and the end of the career you're having, still being able to play in the system that you're playing in with Bill Belichick and these receivers and these weapons that they keep bringing in for you, or just retire. I don't think there's any point. Nothing good can come from Tom Brady leaving New England and playing somewhere else. Like, for nobody. That's not going to help the NFL at all, because we just want one dominant team, one dominant player going to another team. I mean, to me, looking around the NFL, a lot of teams are starting to move on to that next guy, their next generation quarterback. So you bring a 42-year-old in, yes, he's a six-time Super Bowl champion, and he's got a lot of experience, and he's arguably the best guy to ever play this game. Still, there's, you know, what are you going to bring him in for two or three seasons and maybe win a championship? Because just because Tom Brady comes onto your team doesn't mean you're going to just go and be successful and go 14-2 or 13-3 or anything like that. Because we've seen plenty of receivers drop balls this year, even when it's hitting them in the hands. So just because Tom Brady comes onto your team and starts putting balls on guys' chests and in their hands doesn't mean they're going to catch it, doesn't mean they're going to score. So if I'm Tom Brady, I don't see any point in going elsewhere into the NFL and trying to win a championship at this point in your career. If it was 7-8 years ago, maybe. You have a handful of championships. Maybe you're getting kind of tired of the feeling around New England and you want to go somewhere else to spend the last 8-10 years of your career trying to accomplish this same feat somewhere else. But to do it with 2-3 years maybe left in your career doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me just in terms of what you get out of it. Because if you leave New England, right, you leave this rock that you've had, this guaranteed playoff trip that you've had, to go somewhere else to a team that either is on the bubble or has made it to the playoffs the last couple of years and now missed it, and they're relying on you to be that guy, and you can't get the team there, then it's frustrating for you as the quarterback. It's frustrating for that team wondering why they aren't better. It's frustrating for that fan base wondering why they're not better. And then you have this kind of comfortable career that kind of comes crumbling down at the end of it. So if I'm Brady, either stay in New England and play your last 2 or 3 seasons there, or just retire and call it a career. Arguably one of the best careers in the NFL's history. So I like the fact that there's kind of the idea being kicked around that maybe Brady goes somewhere else. And that's always kind of the chasing the wild rabbit. Like, ooh, where might he go? What might he do? But to me, I mean, I know Adam Schefter says he thought the least likely option was that Brady would stay in New England. For me, the least likely option that he's going to leave New England for another team. He's either going to stay there or he's going to retire. And honestly, kind of listening to the way he's been talking and some of his teammates have been talking, it sounds like to me he's leaning towards retirement. It sounds like he's leaning towards calling it a career, hanging up the helmet and the shoulder pads. And, I mean, at this point, I wouldn't blame him. And I would actually kind of root for it, because then maybe we can get some openness there in the AFC to see who might actually make it to the Super Bowl besides New England. But I thought that was interesting how that came up the last couple days with talking about Brady's future and what he might do. And to me, stay in New England for another couple years or retire doesn't make any sense to go anywhere else. Coming up after the break, I'm going to give you my two cents worth on why I think it's a great idea Major League Soccer changed their playoff format and why more soccer leagues around the world should ditch the two-legged playoff system. We'll talk about that coming up after the break on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more. Major League Soccer, I think, did a very smart thing when they restructured their playoff system heading into this year. Prior to this season, they had six teams make it. Essentially, the top two got a first round bye, and you would play a single elimination wild card round game, but then the conference semis and conference finals are both a two-legged format. Essentially, the one team would host the first leg, one team hosts the second leg, the combined score decides the winner. The thing that irks me about that system is the fact that you use away goals as the tiebreaker. So after, let's say that you played both legs and you're tied 3-3, but all three of my opponent's goals came on the road, whereas we just scored one goal on the road, they then get the tiebreaker and win the matchup because of that stat. And I despise that way of choosing a winner in a competitive environment. I mean, you look at the way they tried to fix baseball extra innings in the regular season in the minor leagues, testing out putting a runner on second base as soon as you get to the extras, so that there's, you know, a runner in scoring position to help speed some stuff along. And people flipped out, right? Because they were like, "Hey, we want these guys to play the sport of baseball to decide a true winner." I feel the same way about soccer. You have to let these guys play the sport to decide a true winner. Letting away goals decide something that could be, you know, in this case, a trip to the MLS Cup final, or in the Champions League case, a trip to the Champions League final. I think it's a ridiculous way to determine a winner based on just one stat like away goals like that. So I like the way that Major League Soccer changed to a full-out single elimination contest throughout the playoffs. They increased from 12 to 14 teams, the one extra team each conference, not a huge deal to me. But I think it's a smart thing that MLS went from two legs to single elimination. I would actually be okay with a two-legged playoff series if you didn't use away goals as the tiebreaker. The way I see it, let the lower or worst ranked team host the first leg, and the better and higher ranked team hosts the second leg. And if you're tied at the end of that second game, well, then the better team has home field advantage, as they should, and you just go into overtime, and if you need to, into a shootout. That's the way I think it should be done. That's how you let players decide a playoff series by playing the game, instead of just, "Oh, well, here's a stat that we're going to pull out. This decides." That's essentially using a coin toss to decide the winner. If we're going to go on just a stat, I mean, that's ridiculous. That's no way to determine who can play for a championship or who shouldn't. So I liked the way Major League Soccer restructured their playoff. I hope the Champions League moving forward, or other soccer leagues around the world that use two-leg systems, either use a two-leg system and don't worry about using away goals as your tiebreaker, or just switch to a single elimination playoff. I think that's more exciting anyway. And it makes more sense. I mean, if you're going to do a playoff series, do a series. I mean, two games seems like you got commitment problems. Either do a series or do a single game, and let athletes play to figure out the true winner. Let them play their sport to figure out the winner instead of relying on one stat. That's the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back on the air tomorrow. Remember, starting a little early at 1 p.m. with a special two-hour show. Mr. Sean Cloud will be back in studio, I believe. And we'll talk to you then. Obviously, all local stuff going on, as well as the NFL Sunday, as well as the World Series. We'll talk then. Peace.